Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In this podcast today, I'm going to talk about something that is probably very familiar to you if you have had a chronic fatigue experience, or shall I say, if you are having a chronic fatigue experience or some sort of chronic illness experience where there's an energy challenge, shall we say. And so what I'm going to be talking about is the concept of boom and bust. Sometimes people also refer to this as boom and crash. And I know personally in my own journey, I went through cycles of boom and bust again and again and again and again, much to my frustration, before I was able to learn the lessons that I needed to learn to find stability in my healing journey. So that's really what this podcast today is all about. It's talking a little bit about what's happening when we're going into these patterns of boom and bust, and just sharing some of the ways that we can begin to break free from the cycles of boom and bust, some of the lessons that I learned in my journey, and some of the things that I'm seeing with clients as they navigate this challenge in their health and in their healing. Before I go into the episode, I think you probably already know what I'm going to say is, if you haven't already left a review, I would love it if you could just take 10, 20 seconds right now to leave a review on Spotify or iTunes. I think you just have to click a few buttons, leave 5 stars. On iTunes, you can spend a little bit of time writing a paragraph if you would like to. Every single week when the podcast comes out, I check Spotify and I check iTunes and I check out the ratings, and I see every single week there's a few more. And I'm so grateful to those of you who have taken the time to do that. Why that is important to me and to others is it just helps other people find the podcast. If you found the content in this podcast helpful, I'm sure you would want others to find it helpful too. So with better ratings, more people find the podcast and then they can get the information that they need. And also, just as a thank you, really, for the content that I'm producing, I've said several times on the show, you know, there's no ads. Nobody's paying me to make these podcasts. I'm, in fact, paying someone to edit them for me. And it does take time and energy and sometimes mental challenge to come up with topics and, of course, organize the guests and, you know, all the other kind of logistics that are involved. So if you do appreciate this work, just taking those few moments to leave a review is all the thank you I need, really, at this point in time. So now let's go into the episode and talk a little bit about boom and bust. Boom and bust, as the name suggests, is when we go through periods of boom, which is when we're doing, I guess, we're putting our energy into things, whether that is physical tasks or mental tasks, or even in some cases, emotional challenges. And then we go bust. So we put energy into something, and then as a consequence, we end up in a crash or a flare, and then we need to stop doing, and we need to rest, and we need to recover. And if we're constantly in this cycle, shall I say, of doing too much and then having to strip everything back and then rest excessively and then doing too much and then having to strip everything back so that we're resting excessively, what's happening over time is we first of all don't have any consistency. But if we're constantly operating outside the edges of our capacity, what we experience is deconditioning over time. And this, when I think back to my own journey, was one of the reasons why I got worse and worse over time. Whereas if I had just known, obviously it would have been so nice just to have known everything that I know now at the first moments of getting ill, it could have really prevented a lot of the decline that I experienced in my fatigue experience and would have probably have got better sooner. But unfortunately, life doesn't work like that. I had to go through everything that I went through to learn the lessons that I needed to learn. And of course, bring those lessons to you. If I hadn't been through the experiences I'd had, I wouldn't be half as empowered to share this knowledge with my clients and with listeners of this podcast. But we really need to break the cycle of boom and crash or boom and bust when we are in this chronic illness, chronic fatigue state. And there's different things that are going to contribute to this. You've probably heard me many times on the podcast, especially in more recent months, talk about the concept of stability and the importance of needing to stabilize our systems, whether that's our nervous system or physiological systems, and how that's really an important foundation when it comes to the starting point for fatigue recovery. And I talk about this in a lot more detail in episode 81 of the podcast, which is the title of which is The One Thing You Must Master in Your Fatigue Recovery. And if you haven't already listened to that episode, I will spoil it for you and tell you that the one thing that you must master is stability. So we need to stabilize ourselves. And the opposite of stabilizing ourselves is instability or boom and crash, the up, the down. We get our energy back, we expend it all, we go back into a crash or a flare. So if you listen to that episode 81, I talk a lot about all the things that help us stabilize our system. For the most part, this is kind of looking at things from a physiological perspective, so I won't go into detail on this again now, but the importance of stabilizing blood sugar, the importance of having a good sleep routine, the importance of dealing with infections, and the importance of having a stable movement routine and good pacing. And I kind of want to piggyback off of that now in this episode, because it's all very well to cognitively know that, to listen to these episodes and go, yes, I know I need to have my blood sugar stable. And yes, I know I need to have a good sleep routine. And this, I know I need to be pacing and not doing too much, not moving outside of my capacity. We know. But sometimes there can be a disconnect between what we're doing and then what's actually happening. So sometimes we work with people and like, I don't know why I feel this way. But when we unpack it all, we can see there are patterns which are still acting out or playing out, which are contributing to the overdoing, to the boom part of the boom and bust. And then the bust is just usually what happens as a consequence of too much boom. So a big part of this is going to come down to the connection with the body. And many of us have got this far because we have disconnected from our body for a really long period of time in order to survive. In order to get this far, disconnection has potentially been our superpower. Perhaps you've heard the saying, you cannot solve a problem with the same energy that created it. So the disconnection has been the survival mechanism to get us to this point in time, but it's also created the problem, which is now the fatigue syndrome, the chronic illness, however it's showing up for you. And therefore, the healing, the change that we want to see is going to come through reconnection with the body. But what does that really mean? You know, I always used to think prior to my illness that I was really connected with my body. I was very into sports. You know, I practiced yoga. I lifted weights. Some of these things all required a certain amount of connection. I needed to know where my body was in space so I could execute certain movements. But there's a big difference between knowing where your body is in space and being able to read the landscape of your body, being able to be connected to the language of the nervous system, which is the sensations within the body, the emotional landscape or the emotional temperature of what's really going on. And then if you were to apply, in my case, the sort of like athlete achiever mentality, which is using your mind to keep pushing through, you know, as an athlete, if you're training in the gym, when things get hard and things get difficult, you use your mind to keep your body pushing forwards. If you're in work and you've got a million things to get done and you feel so tired, you just ignore your body to push through because the task at hand feels really important. And this isn't bad. It's not bad that we can do this. It's a skill to be able to do this. But when it's repeated, perhaps unnecessarily all the time, at the denial of our needs and the denial of a genuine need for relaxation, recovery, repair, then it becomes dysfunctional. So yes, I was very body aware to a certain extent, but I also had this overdeveloped ability to push through. That's not helpful when you're somebody who's experiencing a chronic illness and you need to overcome the cycle of boom and bust. And what really started to create the shift for me was when I started to understand my nervous system better and started to learn the language of my nervous system, which was being able to feel the sensations in my body and start to develop what we would call interoception. So starting to really have a highly developed sense of interoception about like what's happening in my internal landscape, being able to connect to my feelings and emotions from a place of curiosity and compassion, and not sort of feeling an emotion and then shutting down or getting overwhelmed. And these are skills that had to be developed. But in learning to become more sensitive to the changes in my system, I could then start to become more sensitive to when I was starting to reach the boundaries of my capacity. Because previously I would just go to my boundaries and beyond. Even as a child, I can still remember my mom saying, "You always push things too far. You always take things too far. You never know when to stop." And yes, literally, she used to annoy me by saying all of those things. And I used to get so cross with her because she would stop me from burning the candle at both ends and doing all the things I wanted to do. But she was absolutely right. And that was a pattern that had been playing out since my childhood, which eventually came to bite me in the bum, so to speak. So when we're looking at these patterns of boom and bust, I don't think it's an overnight shift. I don't think it's like one day we just decide we're going to overcome boom and bust and there we go, we've done it. It's actually a constant refinement of our connection to ourself. And we're always falling in and out of connection with self, but the opportunity to come back again and again and again, quicker, deeper, which really then refines our ability to know when we've gone too far, when something is too much. And I previously recorded an episode on the energetically expensive personality traits. And I feel that this also links in here with this boom and bust, is because sometimes we keep on going because we want to people please, or sometimes we keep on going because we feel that we can't feel the boundary, feel the no in our body, and therefore we go too far. So by reestablishing the connection, it enables us to feel more confident in setting boundaries and perhaps feel the boundaries sooner when they need to be set. And just overall, being able to settle the system faster, noticing when we've been in sympathetic, when we've been in activation for too long, and having a toolbox that brings us back to sympathetic can also be really helpful. And then another kind of pattern to be aware of is, and at least this was very much the case for me at the beginning of my journey, is feeling very uncomfortable with slowing down. You know, I used to live my life a million miles an hour. I used to cram so much in, like, pacing. What was pacing? Pacing was just non-existent in my world. We would just do thing after thing after thing after thing on a daily basis in terms of like a daily cycle, loads of things jammed in, but then also traveling, taking courses, you know, all sorts of different things crammed in on weekly and monthly cycles as well. There wasn't a lot of time for slowness. And if you've been going so fast for so long, to start to slow down can feel really uncomfortable. Because, and I guess in my experience, a lot of the activation, a lot of the hypervigilance that was locked in my system, when I started to slow down, I had to come into contact with that agitation, shall we say. And that agitation was really difficult to confront because I didn't have the somatic toolbox that I have now. And so you slow down, you feel uncomfortable. The only way you know to get rid of that discomfort is to speed up again. So you slow down, you get uncomfortable, you speed up. You slow down, you get uncomfortable, you speed up. But gradually over time, and of course this can happen faster and better with more tools, you slow down, you get a little bit more comfortable to the slowness, and yes, you speed up again, but you don't need to speed up as much anymore. So I guess just coming back to this idea of it's a gradual shift that happens over time. There's no point in shaming yourself for, oh, I just crashed again, or I just went into another cycle again, because it will happen again. It will happen again and again and again and again. But hopefully those cycles become less intense, further apart. The recovery is faster. You know, all those other ways we can gauge change. And then a big one for many people is guilt. People feel guilty when they relax. People feel guilty taking rest. People feel guilty not being productive. And there's a quote by Gabo Mate, which I really love, which is, at least in the beginning stages of change, if she does not feel guilty, then she is not really changing. And you could obviously put she or he or they in terms of pronouns there. But either way, what it's speaking to is this idea that often we stay in our old habits because we have guilt. And it's the, just like the, we have discomfort when we slow down, we can have discomfort when we feel guilty. So we start to change, we feel the guilt because we're resting, we feel the guilt because we're not being productive, the guilt is uncomfortable, it's too much for the nervous system, we don't have tools that help us to cope, and then we go back to the old behavior because we can't be with the guilt. And then the same thing happens again, we start to change, we experience the guilt, it's uncomfortable, we don't have the tools to cope, we go back to the behavior. And this cycle can repeat itself, but we can also speed it up by starting to get comfortable with guilt, to sit alongside guilt, to befriend guilt, to allow guilt to be there. And then the more we allow guilt to be there, then we can be a little bit more comfortable with the changes that are required. So these are just some things that can exacerbate that boom and bust cycle. Just a few other patterns to be aware of. Some of them may or may not apply to you depending on where you are in your journey and your current state of health. But I talked a little bit about using the mind to override the body. Sometimes people might use stimulants like caffeine, for example, to push through, which isn't always helpful. Most of my clients don't drink coffee, but some do, and some are guilty of using coffee, skipping breakfast, using coffee to keep going when they've had a bad night's sleep, which is just stress on more stress. We talked a little bit about the hypervigilance, and there's always something that needs to be done, and we find it really difficult to relax. Hypervigilance is a sign of an overactivated nervous system, somebody who is existing in fight or flight. So we really need nervous system tools to support that. And that's what I teach in the Nurturing Resilience program, which I'll speak a little bit more about at the end. Workaholism, that was me for probably still is me, but it was definitely a part of me where I would use work to meet my needs. So if my needs were being met through work, I could use work as a distraction from other parts of myself, and in doing so, overwork and then end up in a more crash type of cycle. And then exercise addiction, again, you know, once you become really unwell, you can't exercise, so it's difficult to be addicted to it. But prior to becoming unwell, I would over-exercise, and I used to rely on exercise quite a lot to regulate myself in absence of other tools. It was a way that I met my needs. It was a way that I maintained my self-image. And therefore, the loss of the ability to exercise was so devastating because I lost so many of my coping mechanisms and I hadn't cultivated other ones yet. But it was also as I was cultivating other ways in which I could self-regulate and meet my needs and maintain my self-image, it was also a cause for me to constantly try too hard to get back into exercise. And that was a source of boom and bust for me. I would say now I still am someone who loves to exercise, but I can be a lot more at peace with just operating within my capacity on any given day. And I interviewed Zoe McKenzie about exercising for autoimmunity a few episodes back. And she uses this example of seeing exercise like a dial. You turn it up when you feel good, you turn it down when you're not feeling good. Now I knew how to turn exercise all the way up. And now I've learned to have a little bit more flexibility with that dial. And then other things I've touched on as well. So having a dominant inner achiever, constantly wanting to push forwards. And then the perfectionist, the people pleaser, those types of tendencies will also have us tending to push beyond our limits, because those are also coping mechanisms that we've used in order to move forward in life. So perhaps you recognize yourself in some of those patterns which I've shared. And so I guess the reason for me creating this episode is because boom and bust, or overcoming boom and bust, is not as simple as just not doing it. Like, just don't do too much. If it was that easy, this whole journey would be so much easier. But what makes the journey hard is because our illness, or the illness experience, is a manifestation of all of these patterns that we've been building up over a lifetime. And now there's a whole unlearning, relearning that needs to happen as we recondition ourselves to, first of all, building awareness and understanding what the contributing patterns are, understand and have compassion for how and why these patterns were created and how they're serving us. And then taking the time to learn new ways to cope, new ways to engage with the world, new ways to meet our needs, and having the patience to do all of it. It's huge. And I think Raylan Agle, who I also interviewed recently on the podcast, referred to her chronic fatigue experience at growth boot camp. And I think there's very few other situations in life which require somebody to go through so much intense personal growth. You know, I think a lot of people, I guess I want to say, we don't always have the appreciation for ourselves and how much work and growth this journey takes. And so if it's not happening fast enough, if there's ups and downs, if it's not happening overnight, really, really hold in your heart like how hard this journey is and how much work you are doing to reprogram habits and patterns of a lifetime. And just know that what we really want to see is just something is shifting, something is changing. However big, however small, we want to see that there's a change, even if the change isn't always on the scale that we would like it to be. We'd, of course, like it to be instantaneous and monumental, but that's not how this works. So I've talked about boom and bust. I've talked about some of the patterns which contribute to boom and bust. And let's talk about what the opposite of this is. The opposite, first and foremost, as I've said already, is stability. but also building capacity over time. So I talked about how when we go through these repeated cycles of doing too much and then having to strip back to recover, there can be a deconditioning, a depreciation of our capacity over time. But when we are able to maintain stability and then gradually expand our physical, mental, and emotional output within our capacity, then our capacity expands over time. And so what are the patterns that we want to cultivate to support that? I've talked about the patterns we want to uncultivate, the patterns we want to deprogram. But what do we want to program? What do we want to embody more into our being? And probably just the opposite of everything I've just shared. But one of the most important things, or the most important skills I think that anybody can learn, is to become attuned to their body. And that's their physical needs, things like nourishment that favors long-term sustainability instead of a short-term boost. So just on a very physical level, that's eating in a way that builds blood sugar stability over just grabbing some sugar or a cup of coffee for some energy. Yes, the sugary food or snack or the cup of coffee is going to give us that short-term boost, but there's a consequence to that that we have to pay back. But if we start to really listen to what the body needs and we attune to the needs that it has for nourishment, we would never take the sugary snack or the coffee. We would give it protein, we would give it fat, we would give it fiber, and we would repeat so that long-term our needs for nourishment are met. But this goes so much deeper, shall I say, than just physical food nourishment. This is nourishment of our emotional needs, the needs of our nervous system, the needs that we have as human beings for love and connection and growth, and safety and contribution to others, and just the ability to experience our own aliveness. So we really want to cultivate this attunement to, like, what is happening in my body? What are the sensations? What is my body communicating to me? Yes, we can use tools like mindset once the system is regulated, but it's much easier to harness the power of mindset through a regulated lens than through a dysregulated lens. We want to be able to balance how much time we're in our parasympathetic, our rest and digest each day. And we want to, not that we shouldn't be in sympathetic, because there are times for us to be sympathetically activated, but that they should be appropriate. And we should have skills and tools for managing sympathetic activation in the body. And we ultimately just want to build our capacity to feel stress and return to a regulated state thereafter. So I use that example of how the slowing down can feel uncomfortable, or the guilt can feel uncomfortable, or the hypervigilance can feel uncomfortable, and then we overdo to suppress the discomfort. Whereas if we have capacity to be with the uncomfortable sensations or emotions in the body, and we can return to regulation afterwards, maybe discharge some of that activation and stress from the body in a cycle of completion, then we don't need to turn to external coping mechanisms of overdoing or people pleasing or overexercising or workaholism. Very difficult to say that word today, to cope. So there's more of a sense of internal groundedness, internal sense of peace and capacity. And then when we're in a more regulated state, and when we're more grounded, and when we have more inner peace, and we have more self-reliance and tools to cope, there's less reliance on those coping mechanisms that would push us outside of our capacity. So we want to build the ability to be comfortable with a slower pace in life, but not fear the speeding up. I think sometimes in chronic fatigue, there's this emphasis, I need to calm down. I need to be in rest and digest. I need to be parasympathetic. I need to be in a healing state. Yes, you do. Great. But that shouldn't be to this point that you feel fearful of challenge, of stress, of speeding up, because we need both. It's actually the leaning into challenge, leaning into the activation, leaning into the speeding up, and then coming out of it and resting afterwards that builds our capacity. But if we're always fearful of any activation in the body, we're always trying to suppress it, push it down, calm it down, we actually can diminish our capacity over time. So we need both. We need to be settled and rested and regulated, and we also need to move into challenge and activation at times. We want to cultivate the belief that rest is productive. And this is often a difficult one for people to grapple with. There can be this, you know, we live in a society where productivity and achievement is rewarded. And if we're not productive, we can often feel less than. But sometimes resting is one of the best things, one of the best gifts that we can give ourselves. And I always say to people, I'm just sharpening my sword for the next adventure. So, you know, we want to have adventures, we want to have periods of doing, and then we also want to have periods of rest, which is actually where some of the integration happens. So from a healing perspective, you know, we do a little bit of healing work, and then we step away and we allow the body to integrate that. And actually, that's the most productive time, because that's when the actual change is happening. Without that rest, we don't get the integration, we don't get the change. It's the same with exercise. We stress the body, but the new connections and repair and recovery and generation of fitness, shall we say, happens with rest and with nourishment. So we do need to understand that rest is a very important point, important part of the process. I don't seem to be able to talk today, and really work on any belief systems that tell us otherwise. Flexibility is really important, and this means that we don't only have one strategy by which we meet our needs. So sometimes I think of like old Anna, you know, workaholic, over-exerciser, and those are ways in which I met my needs for self-worth and self-regulation. But if I can validate my self-worth and I can self-regulate in 10 different ways, in 20 different ways, then there's less of a need for over-reliance on one. And that means if you can't work or you can't exercise or something happens, it doesn't feel like such a big knock to your identity. And it doesn't feel like such a big knock to your ego, because yes, those parts of you are not available right now, but there are other parts which are accessible, and that just makes it easier to regulate oneself in life, and it makes life a lot less stressful place to be. Another one here is food. I haven't historically really used food to self-regulate, but some people do. And then they have to make dietary changes to support their health, and that's really hard because they haven't found other ways to cope. So we really kind of want to see, like, if we're overly reliant on certain strategies, and just, it's not about taking that strategy away, but it's about diversifying the strategies that we have as coping mechanisms, so we could pick any one of those. So for example, you could, to downregulate, you could, instead of eating some food, you could walk in nature, you could cuddle your pets, you could talk to a friend, you could do some journaling, you could do some grounding. And there's loads of different things you could do instead of only being able to respond as a system to food to self-regulate. We also want to unpack some of those energetically expensive personality traits. So especially like the inner achiever. I still say, like, I've got an inner achiever. I'm always going to have a strong inner achiever, but she's more balanced now with other parts. So there is this very A-type, highly efficient achiever in me, but there's also other parts which I've strengthened and cultivated, like the softer, more grounded, more gentle parts, which support the achiever and make sure she doesn't do too much. We also want to be able to cultivate healthy boundaries with ourselves, with others, and also be able to distinguish the boundary between self and others, so that we don't merge and become overly dependent on other people's regulation for our own regulation, which is often the case if you're a people pleaser or overgiver. So just remember that many of these patterns that are facilitating the cycle of boom and bust, they developed once upon a time to protect us. And now we really just want to create a new and more helpful way of being so that this can facilitate our healing. And we can't work on everything at once. It takes time. And I'm biased, but I would probably say that some of the best work that you can do is just a cult of having a toolbox to support yourself and having a toolbox to support your nervous system and help you to understand some of these patterns on a nervous system level. What's showing up in your nervous system when X, Y, and Z is playing out? And then what can you do to manage that nervous system experience? And this is a nice little segue. I said I would talk a little bit more about the Nurturing Resilience Program. Up until now, I've run this program as a kind of open close cart cohort. So what that means is it's been a live program. People pay, they join live, they're in a group for a certain amount of time, and then we run through the program. And the reason for doing it that way was because I really liked having the intimacy of support in my group programs, and I've seen that work really well for the people who've been willing to sign up. But the challenge is also that nervous systems operate in different paces. Everybody's nervous system is different, and sometimes it can create a lot of pressure, especially if you're a system that's in freeze. It can be a lot of pressure to keep up with the group. And then we have these like people pleasing, performing tendencies where we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make sure we do everything at the right time. And then we don't always have the space that we need to process. So it's like a constant little juggle that I've been having with the Nurturing Resilience Program. And the other option was that people could take it as a self-study module, which means they could work through it their own time, which alleviates the pressure, but then there's no support around it. So as time has gone on, I've been thinking more about the program, and I decided to make some changes which will hopefully make the program also more accessible to people that need it. So I decided to move the program to a subscription-based model. And what that would also then include would be a monthly live call where people can ask questions and get support and have a discussion around certain topics. So I guess the difference between this and the live program is that in the live program, we would have weekly calls. It would tend to be a small group, and that same group would be working through the same content in the same week for the duration of the program. With the subscription model, people are coming in at different stages, so it's not as structured, but I think it's a really good middle ground to accommodate more people at a reasonable price. So what that basically means is that now you can invest in the Nurturing Resilience Program, and it's just a subscription fee of £39 per month. You can cancel at any time. So if you start and you decide it's not for you, then you have the ability just to cancel, and you will lose access to the course and access to the call recordings. But at least you have the opportunity to try the program and see if it's for you without the big financial risk, because I can appreciate that that can be tricky when you are trying to navigate a chronic illness. So if this is something that's interesting to you, if you've heard a lot about what I've said today in terms of these patterns of boom and bust and how ultimately it's our nervous system and the way that we've learned to live our lives, which is contributing to the boom and bust, and you're looking to have more tools or better tools for self-regulation and to break some of these patterns, the program could potentially be supportive for you. All you need to do is go to my website, annamarsh.co.uk/nurturing-resilience, or just find the Nurturing Resilience on my website or the link that will go with this podcast, and you can join us. So I'll probably be talking a little bit more about it over the next few weeks, just because it is a new change. We want to encourage a sense of community in the program, and it would be lovely to have you and see you there. But even if you don't need that further support, I really hope that you've got a lot from listening to this episode today, and I will see you in the next one.